This is The Women of Lettuce, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom.
Welcome to the Women of Letters podcast with Jules and Amy, counting down now to season 10 of Supernatural. Hello, Amy.
Hello, Jules. Now, we're not in the same place this time. We're separated by states again.
Oh, no, that's right. Last time we podcasted, we were in Vancouver together.
We were. It was awesome.
We have been together since then. We should briefly just mention. We were. I had a flying visit up to Sydney a couple of weeks ago for Oz Comic Con, where we had the absolute delight of having dinner with Mr. Mark Shepherd.
Which was an absolute delight, as you'd expect it to be. He was very charming and full of sass and wit and good conversation about music and everything. And
vaginas.
Vaginas. Songs about vaginas.
Yeah, sorry. I think that's down to me. I don't know why I have this effect on but we should mention this wasn't just Amy and I. It was one of the fan events that becoming both Oz Comic Con and Armageddon Con over here do, which are one or two actors from a particular franchise or show and 10 or so fans, and you have dinner at a three-course dinner at a swanky hotel and get to spend a few hours with someone. And I'm a big rap for them as someone who goes all deer in the headlights at autographs and photos. I find it this is the second one I've done, and I find it a lot more comfortable and gives people a chance to get into their comfort zone, to have conversations, to, you know, we had people at the table. There was a woman who had her 13-year-old and her 19-year-old kids with her. We had, a range of people, and it gave everyone a chance to interact in pretty special ways that you don't normally, conversations you don't normally have a chance to develop.
And it's also interesting because you're in a room, like this was a particularly large one, certainly a lot larger. The Oz Comic Con one was a lot larger than the Armageddon one.
Could you say the Oz Comic Con didn't have a big enough room?
They probably needed a room twice that size because everything was very close. But you're actually in the same room with all the other shows and all the other fans with all the other guests. And
which I've said, it's like some sort of fandom wedding because you walk in and each table has like Harry Potter table, the Stargate table, the Warehouse 13 table, the Supernatural table. So it's quite a bizarre gathering because you've got these stars, haven't you, from the Veronica Mars table.
Jason Doring was sitting right behind me and I got totally distracted. I looked at my shoulder. And holy shit, Jason Doring's right behind me. And I'm like, okay, I can't concentrate on anything.
So it's a bit of a surreal experience in that way, aside from the fact even at our table you're having dinner with Mark Shepherd.
Yeah, apart from the fact you're sitting with Mark Shepherd, you know, Jason Momoa's over in the far corner standing up doing stuff and you're like distracted by that. That's way distracting. It was a really lovely night. Everybody on the table was funny because we'd all connected via Twitter or Facebook. So, we all knew pretty much who everybody was going, even though we hadn't all met. A few of us had met before. But everybody was lovely and, food wasn't too bad and it was lovely. And of course, Mark being Mark, our table was the last one to leave and he stayed the longest.
We closed the place down, which was lovely. I mean, again, that was, a testament to Mark. He loves, as we know, he loves the panels. He loves these sort of events. You know, he's not a huge fan of the, autograph and the photos purely because, he doesn't get enough time with people. And, this was he was in his element. It was a wonderful, wonderful group of people. I think I said to someone, this really, for me, is what fandom is about, when you can have a group of you know, 10 people come together, who most of whom don't know each other, and share a wonderful night like that and get on so well. And I've, you know, no idea what everyone else's backgrounds or lives are like, and that you could have a couple of kids there.
And really, we were sitting chatting amongst ourselves as well as chatting to Mark. You know, you'd be having conversations with the person next to you about something else while Mark was, you know, chatting to the table, because it was like that. It was like a dinner party.
Yeah, so that's a really good way of putting it. And so it's not just everyone sitting listening to Mark. You know, other conversations start, and I moved around the table at one point so, you know, people could shift around a bit. And, and look, Mark is hugely entertaining. He's great with kids.
He was great with the boy.
The 13-year-old.
And,
I mean, you know, Mark's got two teenage boys, so he well knows what they're like, but, you know, he had something to share with everyone, and lots of fun, lots of raucous fun.
It was great. And he did a good panel we saw. You didn't stay for his panel, did you, on Sunday? Because you had to.
I saw a little bit of panel.
You had to fly.
Had to fly out.
But his panel was great. And it's funny because, you know, like, because, I mean, I've done a bunch of cons, so I've seen Mark's panels a lot, plus also here in Australia, you know, that was, I think, the third or fourth I've seen that he's done in Australia. It's always fun to kind of watch people who aren't used to him and aren't used to how he interacts with fans. And there was at one point when someone was asking him about Doctor Who, and, you know, he's doing the walking around, and I was sitting on the aisle. And this guy was just giving Mark shit. He was, like, giving him lip. And Mark came up to me and he said, he doesn't know how this works, does he? And I went, no, he doesn't. He goes, is that going to work with me? And I went, oh, no, it's not. He goes, no, that's right. And he just kept walking. And it was just really funny because it's like, yeah, we know you can't do that. You know? We've seen Mark enough to know you don't sass Mark Shepherd. He just moves along, you know, and it was fun. It was really funny to watch people not used to him, you know, his unique way of managing panel. But it was a fantastic panel because there's, you know, he has so many, his finger in so many different shows, so to speak. There was a lot of conversation about a lot of different shows, so it wasn't, you know, purely Supernatural. It was a lot of Doctor Who. It was White Collar. It was, you know, everything. So,
well, I thought, because I'd actually been in that room, that space for the panel before, which was Warehouse 13, which of course he was on as well. Yeah. I'm like, gee, he could have joined in that panel.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, no, he's a excellent con value. I was thrilled that I got to go up for the weekend. So our next con here in Australia is Armageddon in about a month,
and I'll be going down to Jules.
Amy is coming down to my place, and we will have Alana Huffman and the Ghostfaces, and we'll be having dinner with them.
Yes, we will.
I'm sure you will. You know, these are sort of $200-$250, and in the scheme of con events, they work out, I feel, at very good value, particularly given these are, you know, they're mixed fandom conventions. So, you know, your ticket to go to a day of these conventions is $25. So yeah. All up, it's after going to the super, you know, Supernatural specific cons, it seems like change.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty. Even the expensive tickets are cheap compared to the other cons. So, yeah. Anyway, it was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to Armageddon. They've got that great competition that they're running too with the Ghostfaces to write fan fiction.
Yes, you can write some write some fanfic, and the Ghostfaces will act it out on stage. So I'm trying to see if I can do anything that is for general consumption. We'll see how I go.
I've been thinking about it as well. I've been thinking in my head. Well, I've been writing things in my head, going, "Will I actually do? I think I should do this." Yeah, so maybe I might as well. I might give it a whirl too. It'd be fun.
It will be. Anyway, today on Women of Letters podcast, I should tell you what we're going to do. Now, we will be doing, hopefully before season 10 starts, a season 9 recap.
Yep.
However, I only received my DVDs yesterday, so and I didn't want to start rewatching until I got them. So haven't finished the recap. But what we thought we'd do, and this came about, how did this come about? It was a conversation we had on Twitter.
Yeah, it came about, wasn't it like some article of the favorite, your favorite Sam and Dean moments or something? Oh, yes. And there was only like five or something. And it was like five and top five or something. And yes, I was like, oh my God.
People started talking
at
about
it. 1,000.
Yeah. Anyway, we thought, and I think particularly in light of both where season 8 and where season 9 finished, that, and because there are so many wonderful moments, that it'd be a good way to travel through the boys' relationship and all 9 seasons. So Amy and I have pinky sweared not to name every time the boys speak to each other as a bromant. I've given her strict instructions. We're going to try and keep it to 2 main. Well, we can have at least we can have one each, and maybe a minor one per season. I know, and we always love hearing how much you enjoy the podcasts. You possibly want it to be under 6 hours.
Really? Do you really want it to be under 6 hours? And I've got to say, if there's weird dog noises in my house, I have a new dog.
Oh, yes, I think this is Buffy's first podcast.
This is Buffy's first podcast. And
hi, Buffy.
She's just got up, unfortunately, because she was sleeping on the end of my bed, which was a delight because she's a puppy and full of beans. And I've got my mum's dog at the moment, who's 11 and also a puppy and full of beans. So if there is a kerfuffle, that will be what it is, because they play fight the whole time. I'll try not to bellow at them, which is basically what I do.
And my dog's sound asleep, so we've had big adventures out in the bush today, so she and I aren't moving anywhere quickly.
Right. I'm just listening to my dog standing in her water bowl, which is her new trick. So I might have to bellow at her.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, water everywhere. Awesome.
We should let's start with season 1.
Okay.
Amy, I will throw it open to you. Sam and Dean moment of the season. First one you've picked out. I shouldn't say the first one.
I don't know whether to go with the first one I've picked out or the one that I really like the most. Which one should I go with? One of the ones that I really liked, which I thought was one of the most telling sort of moments of the season and their relationship and how they then, you know, who they then became later on, was actually right at the end of the season.
Yep.
Was in Devil's Trap when Sam actually believed Dean over his dad in that final moment when the yellow-eyed demon has taken John, and Dean saying, you know, you're not my father. I know you're not my father. And Sam kind of comes into this and sort of looks between them and can see, you know, that Dean is so, believes it so much, he steps up and steps next to his brother, and like physically, not just, you know, in spirit goes along with his brother, but he actually physically steps in beside his brother, you know, to create this united front. And I thought that was a really amazing moment. And I thought it talked a lot about how their relationship had developed from the beginning of season 1, where they had just rediscovered each other and you know the journey that they were taking together as they became brothers again, to where they stood at the end, where they, you know, Sam in actual fact trusted his brother above anything or anyone else in that moment. And that for me is probably the pivotal brother moment, though there are wonderful brother moments in season 1. For me, that was the pivotal brother moment that just spoke so much.
Yes. Oh, look, and I would certainly agree with that, and probably just about every moment in Devil's Trap, which remains certainly one of my favourites. Of course, I think we can't go past saying how much gets set up in the pilot, and I think particularly for people who started watching it, you know, back when it was on, but I suppose everyone, most people start with the pilot, although people may have come in at some point and then go back and watch it. But I think the pilot sets up, you know, so much of what we see throughout nine seasons, both the combative side of their relationship and the bond as well. And I think it does, you know, it does that so well. We've got, you know, when Dean sneaks into the apartment and they fight, the moment where he's trying, you know, to convince Sam to come with him and says, you know, I can't do this alone. And Sam says, yes, you can. And he says, but I don't want to. I mean, that exchange there sums up, you know, a huge amount, I think, about both of them. My one's actually one of the ones, and again, it's so hard not to go through every episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the scene in Scarecrow at the beginning of Scarecrow when Dean's tracking down clues that John's given them and. They're in the car and you know, Sam just wants to find John and Dean's like, no, we've got to work the case. And there's a moment when, you know, Dean says, you know, look, I know how you feel. And Sam's like, you know, how could you know how I feel? You know, you're a child when Mum died. You know, Jess has only been dead for a few months. You know, they split from there, if you like, in that Dean's, you know, very much we've got to follow what Dad wants us to do. Sam's really, you know, look, you've got to think for yourself and not do what Dad does. And that's at the point where, you know, Dean basically stops the car and Sam gets out and leaves. And I think that's, you know, the first time we really see that they haven't just reunited and had the, you know, the tragedy of Jess's death and they're back together. I mean, we really see that there's a deep fracture there, and it's not just about what they do in this moment, but we really start to see that there's a deep rift is not quite the right word, but there's things that go back to their
underlying history.
Yeah, there's things that go back to their childhood. They've reunited, of course, but as adults when they were really children or you know young adults, teens when they separated, they don't know each other. They think they know each other, of course, which is part of the problem. But and they've got different agendas. And I think it's one of those moments where the show took on for me and added depth, that it wasn't just going to be – the pilot wasn't just throwing these brothers back together again conveniently so they can go hunting. It really is speaking to the fact that their relationship is going to be core to what we're exploring through this, and it's not going to be easy. And that, you know, them splitting up, and even though they, you know, come back together again by the end of the episode, it's not a, you know, this, I think this conversation speaks to so much. And it's not the first time, of course. There's been bits dropped. The other one I mentioned briefly is Bugs, where, again, we start to see they've both got very different views, as siblings often do, of their childhood, where they both thought the other brother was the favoured child, if you like, you know. Sam thought John favoured Dean because he was the perfect hunter, and Dean thought, you know, Sam was the one who was favoured because he was sort of the golden child and the one with potential. And, you know, reminder of Mary and all that. So I really think, although this is not a happy moment and it's not a positive one, I suppose in a way for me and most of the, you know, for me the good bromance always have a precursor that's, you know, a dark moment as well. And so, yeah, we of course it's great at the end of the episode when they reunite, but
even in, I actually had down from that episode the speech that Dean gives Sam over the phone when he tells Sam that
I'm proud of you, you always did
what you wanted to do and stood up for what you wanted to be, and you know, I'm proud of you, and go off and do your own thing, you know. He was, and I thought that speech was, you know, for seeing as they were like at such loggerheads, and Dean was, you know, no, you've got to do this. This is what we've got to do. And it really showed, I think, a lot more depth to Dean than we were starting to see a lot more depth in him. And, you know, that kind of love for his brother that he would acknowledge that, you know, you go and do your own thing. If that's what's going to make you happy, then, you know, I'm happy for you, because I've always admired that in you, that you're able to do that, and I've never been able to do that.
And that, I think, speaks to a tension that we're still dealing with 9 years later in their relationship, in that Dean does genuinely, I think, want Sam to live a good life and be happy, and Dean wants Sam to be with him.
So and the two and don't necessarily
and
go
hand
in hand.
The two are sometimes at tension, as they are, you know, back in Scarecrow. Do what, you know, I don't think Dean's happy, but he's not going to not let Sam go because of what he wants. And again, we see that come up again, although it's in more fraught way in Shadow, where Sam's like, oh, we're going to kill the yellow-eyed demon tonight and I can go back to college. And Dean's all, fuck that. I don't want you to go.
Yeah, I want us to be a family again.
Yes. And, you know, Sam's like, well, yeah, of course, just because we're not in the car together doesn't mean we're not a family. And, you know, again, all these moments in the first season are setting up or revealing to us bits of what we find out, you know. Yeah.
And how differently they do see family and, you know, their relationship within the family as well.
And yes, I think, you know, we see echoes and these tensions and these dynamics played out in different ways over the following seasons. And, you know, the show owes so much to that having been laid down so well in the first season, and obviously that's why most of us fell in love with the show.
Exactly.
Here's my heart, rip it out again.
Over and over and over. And I think, you know, if we're going to talk about light moments too, of course, all the pranking is super good fun. And I think also shows another, in Hell House, which also shows another side of their relationship that we hadn't actually seen, which was them being, you know, bratty brothers, and what they must have always done to each other, you know, all the tricks that they must have done and how annoying they probably were to each other at some point. And, that was a really nice tell as well, I think, to who they were, and gave us a little bit of a background to them.
Yes, and gave them a chance. You know, again, season one is about them learning who they are as adults, but just also connecting with what they'd lost from their childhood after their however many years of separation. So, those days of the happy pranking.
Oh my God. Long gone, long gone.
Well, yes, and long then you look back and, you know, and I know we've said this before, you know, coming up on 10 years, how, you know, we've seen these characters and these actors, of course, grow up. We're very lucky to have had a show that started them in a place and has taken them forward in a way that they have developed. They haven't just stayed as they were in season one, although these core pieces of their personalities, you know, have challenged and been changed. They're things that, as we all know, get played out in families and relationships again and again. So moving on to season two.
Right, season two. I'm just looking at my list, just trying to think.
Season two, every episode.
I've got like a lot. I'm trying to figure out which one. I really like. I have got a lot, but there's some that are just tiny little moments. But I really liked in My Time of Dying, which was the opener for season two, how Sam never gave up on Dean ever. He wanted to bring his brother back, and he was gonna do it, come hell or high water. And you know, I loved his little speech to Dean about, you know, come on man, you know, you can't go, we've just started to become brothers again, which is what we've, you know, have just been talking about, that they were just starting to find themselves again as brothers. And and so he was sticking by Dean and, you know, standing up against his dad and just supporting his brother who needed him in that moment, and he was just never going to give up. And I love that episode. It's one of my favorite episodes, and I love Sam in that episode. And I thought that moment where he stood, and also the great moment when they're actually in front of the Ouija board and you know, they're like, yeah, you know, they can finally communicate, and how excited they both yes. are, you know. And Sam's like, it's good to, you know, hear from your man, sort of thing, and know you're there. And Dean's like, yeah, too right, I'm here. And, you know, there's just this real joining of them, even though one of them's not there. Yes. Yeah, there was just this palatable relief that they were able to communicate again and found each other again. And I thought that episode was really lovely for how strongly they were bonding beyond the veil, kind of thing, which I thought was great.
And again, it points to something that will happen, you know, again and again over the seasons, is that it always seems that every time they have these moments of either reconciliation or moving forward together in their relationship is, you know, bloody shit happens. You know, yeah, they never get, you know, right on the moment, on the cusp of those moments, always something happens. And either it's, even if it's not directly at them, you know, they've got to go and save the world or do something that they never get a chance to, that chance to build on what they've just done in a good space is taken away from them. Because, you know, and in this case, we end up with, you know, obviously John dies, which affects both of them, but and the possibility he's made a deal to save Dean, and then Dean has the secret about Sam, and, you know, they don't have a chance to go off and kick the footy around.
Yeah, exactly. It's just when they're actually... It's just when they're actually getting into a place where they feel like they might be good, it might be good for them, and their relationship's on a good, you know, a bit more of an even keel, as bam, something, you know, world-destroying is about to happen, and then their life goes into chaos again, and they have to lie to each other, and, you know, so, and it keeps happening. So, which, yeah. But I really liked that moment, and there are other moments in. I really liked... just little moments, because I really think the little ones are really telling. Like in both in Hunted and Born Under a Bad Sign, when Dean thinks Sam's been hurt, and the first thing he does is he like grabs him and pats him down and checks him. You know, in Hunted, he checks him all over, and Born Under a Bad Sign, he's like trying to find if that blood is Sam's, and he's like, you know, he's done it since then, but those two are two of the first times that we really see him grab him and like really check him over, and he can't help himself. I mean, Dean's really badly hurt as well, you know, in Hunted he's been all tied up. The first thing he does is he gets released and he grabs Sam and he checks him all over with his hands to make sure that his little brother's okay, you know. And he's furious, you know, has this guy hurt you? And he's looking at him, and you know, they're just kind of little things, but they're gorgeous moments. Those ones are gorgeous moments.
They are. And another one that I'd bring up, which is one of my favourites, is when Sam gets drunk in Playthings. Mm. And Playthings, actually, although being, you know, obviously having a serious side to the episode, you know, has its fun moments with them being mistaken for a gay couple, the whole thing of, you know...
Antiquers
and Dean dobbing Sam in as an antique doll collector.
But it's a creepy episode. I find that episode super creepy.
And we know both the boys found the dolls creepy. But then, you know, Sam does get drunk and he's burdened with, you know, what's been revealed about him, and, you know, asks, you know, says, as Dean's, after he's called Dean short and bossy, Dean's manhandling him into bed, and then Sam says, "Is, you know, if I ever turn into something evil, you'll have to kill me." And part of the interesting thing is Dean actually says, "You know, it's the first time he said, you know, he says Dad was an ass. You know, he should never have asked that of me." And it's such a great moment, because it's, you know, it is both about, it's about both of what they're carrying at this moment, but it's in this context of, you know, Sam being really, really drunk, which is funny.
and he's huge, and Dean's trying to bundle him into bed, which is funny.
You know, it's sort of wrapped up in some humour, but is actually quite an intimate moment between them, because it's the core of what they're both facing. Sam's fearful of what he will become, and Dean's fearful of what he's going to have to do. And, you know, it's a particularly favourite moment of mine, because...
I nearly had that one on my list as well.
What else have you got for season two, dare I ask?
I've also got All Hell Breaks Loose too, when Dean finally comes clean about, you know, having sold his soul. And yeah. I just love that whole scene where, you know, Sam confronts him and he goes, you know, what did you do? And he's like, nothing, you know, and he's trying to, and he's scuffing his feet on the ground and he's looking down. He's going, did you say, no, come on. And then he has to own it, you know, and he's like, well, you know, is it, you know, I've got, it's my job, you know, sort of thing. And Sam's like, well, I'm going to look out for you because I'll do anything for you, you know. And that whole moment between them when you realise, you know, they're both the same, really. They're both willing to do anything. And Dean might be the big brother and feel like he has to look after his little brother, but Sam also feels like he has to look after Dean. And
Well, I think it also speaks to, you know, I think in a way it's a bit of a shock for Dean, because, you know, when Sam says, you know, don't you realise I'd sacrifice anything for you? You know, don't you think I would do exactly the same thing for you that you've done for me? And you know, I think, again, it's Dean has never really thought of the reciprocity in their relationship. His role is looking after Sam. And to think that, you know, I don't think he's... The notion that Sam would see that as his role as well, not in the way that he thinks Sam doesn't care for him or anything, but it's almost like
it's his job.
It's his job to look after Sam. Yeah. And I think, again, it's a very telling moment, and one we see developed into season three, where you know, it's played out as, you know, Dean seemingly accepts his fate and Sam becomes increasingly, you know, frustrated that not only that Dean's accepting it, but also that Dean seemingly won't let Sam save him, you know. And yeah. I don't think Dean realises that in doing that he's taking something from Sam. You know, I always say it's a thing about, you know, some people don't realise when they're think they're being generous and giving people things and saying, oh, I don't want anything in return. In some ways, you're denying the person their chance to be generous in return or to give you something. And I think Dean's very like that. He doesn't see that he takes something from Sam every time he prevents Sam from doing something for him. And, and we see that very much played out as we go into season three. And of course, it's what drives Sam towards Ruby, because she's saying, well, I can help you do this. You know, Dean's not going to come on this journey with you and let you do these things. You're going to have to do it yourself. And she's there to, you know, to open that door for him.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of that coming. It's all this sort of understanding that's building through season one and two as Dean begins. It's almost like Dean seeing his brother as a grown up, you know. Not that I think he ever really does, but you know what I mean. He was like a kid who went off to college, and now he's this man standing in front of him saying, I would do anything for you as well, you know, and you know, I've got to save you too, and now I'm gonna have to save you because you've had to save me, so now it's my turn. I think it's opening Dean's eyes to who Sam is, and he's not this the kid that he knew.
No, but I also think for Dean it gets tied up with also he subconsciously, I think, often feels threatened by Sam offering to save him or being capable in that way, because Dean feels that's the defining part of his identity, as he says on more than one occasion. You know, it's my job. It's who I am, is the person who looks after my little brother. And if I don't have that, who am I? You know, what
I think he still struggles with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's that again, and that's one of their, you know, core misunderstandings, if you like, is that he doesn't realise what he's taking away from Sam in always taking on that role, and Sam doesn't understand that for Dean that role is such a defining part of his identity that him offering to share that burden or to look after himself or to say, I don't need your help or whatever, Dean just feels as rejection, and rejection not of a core part of who he is. And it's like, well, you know, who am I if I'm not that?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think he's built on and learnt over the years, but it's you know, something he's learnt from childhood, like from before Mary died, he was the one who held the family together. So it's like such a fundamental part of who he sees himself as. And, of course, skipping ahead to season 9, and well, even before that, with so many people around him having died, you know, that gets challenged a lot.
Yeah, a lot. Yes, and Sam challenges it a lot.
Yes, yes, yeah. And again, it's not. They're both coming from a good place. It's just that they can't hear it.
Oh,
boys,
they're exhausting. And then, of course, we had little silly light moments like the tall tales with like the bed rumble, and you know, all those like cute little brother things that I think when they're peppered throughout, just little nudges, and you know, them fighting like morons on the bed and stuff like that, just it reminds you of that they did grow up together, like that they're not these two,
they're not strangers who came together.
Strangers who came together, and you know, they're not just these hunters focused on stuff. They've got this whole history of when they were brothers and used to rumble and tussle and, you know, prank each other and all that kind of stuff, and little moments peppered throughout of just little tiniest things, I think, often just reminds you that they have this other history that we haven't seen but we hear about, but that shows them to be just like typical brothers, you know, in a bizarre world, but they were typical brothers growing up.
Yes, yeah. So moving into season 3, where, oh God, we've got some doozies in season 3.
Yeah.
And I can't go by without mentioning, let's see, where do we want to start? What was your first one?
I think my first one was in Fresh Blood when,
yes,
yeah, Dean's like being all, you know, Deanish, and you know, saying like pretending he doesn't care and he's just going to fight vamped up Gordon and doesn't matter, and Sam finally speaks up and says he just wants his brother back, you know, he's, yep, followed him around all his life, and you know, he knows him, he goes, you know, because, well, I know you're scared because I followed you around, I've been looking up to you,
and even more
life.
Than knows him, he says, I've been
studying you, that's
trying
it.
To be just like my big brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and he just wants him back because he can see who Dean is not Dean, and he can Dean's pretty transparent most of the time, I reckon, really. And yeah, I think that's a really great moment, and it totally connects with Dean. He can see how his behavior is affecting Sam, and it changes what he was intending to do, and it changes how he's acting, at least in that situation, and moving forward as well.
Yeah, and we have that lovely scene then at the end of the episode by the Impala with the green cooler.
With the green cooler.
Shout out to the green cooler, who's now on Twitter.
Yeah, I love the green cooler.
when, you know, Dean starts to show him how to fix the parlor, which is just
heartbreaking.
It is.
It's really heartbreaking because he's not going to be around to do it. And it's just heartbreaking. It's horrible. But then they, you know, like they always do, they lighten it up. He goes and sits down on the green cooler and tells his brother to put his elbow into it. You know,
yeah.
And I, you know, they have these like really poignant moments, but then they kind of are able to lighten it up with a bit of laughter, which there's a couple of times that happens in this season that I've got listed as well, like in Long Distance Caller.
Yes,
when they're
at
having
the end.
That really profound conversation at the end, and Dean's admitting that, you know, it was
he can't expect Dad to turn up and save him. He's got to save himself, and Sam pipes up with, you know, me.
That's right. No, he's going to say, I'm just myself, me. That's all you've got. What do you want, a poem or something? Moment's yeah. gone. I just love that whole interaction because it's yep. just really gorgeous. And then also in the final episode of the season when Dean's giving the big speech about how they're not going to bend over again for the demons and they're, you know, like they're going to stand up and fight and come together. And Sam's like, oh, you were full on. What was he? I can't even remember what he said now. You were full on jamming Eye of the Tiger there, won't you?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I fully rehearsed that speech too, you know, yeah. and it's just this really nice yeah. little lightness
undercut
on this. And I think that's great because they know what to say to each other to kind of lighten the moment. And it's also a very sort of sibling thing to do is to, yes. you know, sort of take a bit of piss when you can kind of thing. And I think both of those are great.
Now, we can't go through season three without mentioning a couple of other things, particularly A Very Supernatural Christmas that I think ranks up there with many people's favourite brother episode, because of course we find out finally the origins of the amulet, and we have you know, running throughout this episode is the fact that you know, Dean wants to celebrate his last Christmas because it's his last Christmas, and Sam doesn't want to celebrate Dean's last Christmas
because it's his last Christmas.
Which, of course, is again encapsulating that different point of view on the same, you know, on the same thing as we were talking about earlier. And we have those absolutely adorable flashbacks to young Sam and Dean, and you know, Dean stealing Christmas presents and trying to protect Sam and, you know, keep him as an innocent child for longer, but to no avail, of course, because Sam's, you know, read John's diary, and then Sam gives him the amulet.
And that is a wonderful moment, and, you know, gives it to him, and it speaks to, I think, how important Dean is in Sam's life, even at such a young age. But for me, the most poignant part of the episode that really just it hits a nerve with me is when they give each other Christmas presents at the end,
yeah.
and they've both nipped out. I mean,
yeah,
they've both
the
nipped
gas
out,
station.
Gone to the gas and,
gas
sip,
and
down,
sip
down the street and bought each other gifts, and they're literally so chuffed to get something. No, you know, like they both look so happy to get something from each other, and they're looking, and one of, you know, Sam gives Dean some fuel for him and fuel for his baby. He gets a candy and some oil or something for the car. Sam gets a shaving cream and some skin mags, but they genuinely look really tickle pink and moved and just touched by what their brother has done. And to me, I find it just heartbreaking because it just speaks to how little these guys have, like, one, how little they have in their life of just stuff, you know everybody gets presents and, you know, we're used to it and, oh, thanks, you know, but how little that they have, that they get, you know, just so touched by getting these ridiculous gifts, but also, you know, that moment, it's just, you know, the fact that they would do that for each other, and that their life is so different that they, you know, they wouldn't, that's not this is something out of the ordinary for them. And it's such a beautiful moment, but it's such a heartbreaking moment because you can see how really tragic their lives are in apart from the fact that Dean's, you know, on got a death knell, you know,
well,
hanging
and
above
that,
his,
you know,
head, but
that,
which makes it all the more poignant. And just,
well, when
you know
that all they have is each other, and they're about to
lose
that as well.
And there's the little, you know, they look like Sam's going to say something, he's going to do something, you know, and they're having this moment and drinking the eggnog, and he's like, Dean, and then he just says, oh, do you want to watch the game? And and it's just beautiful. And then they sit there and watch the game together. And for me, that last scene, the gift giving and how happy they are in that moment and how, you know, really, they really like their presents, and their presents are shit. But, you know, it's what they represent, and they really, really like it. And, I love that little final scene. The episode is beautiful, and the amulet and all the flashback stuff with the kids is wonderful, and the talk that they have on the bed where they talk about the fact that Dean wants to celebrate and Sam doesn't, that's great, and it's all shot from practically from behind, which I think is really nicely done on the set, facing forward on the separate beds. But then that, just that last scene, it just for me is I think it's one of the most powerful scenes of the whole series.
Yeah. With the Impala outside the window.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. Yeah. Just the whole shot when we pull back out and, you know, and they're sitting.
And they've just got that little moment in a capsule that, you know, is going to disappear. But
it's like almost normal.
Almost, yes.
Yeah. Oh, they break my heart.
Well, they do. And, I mean, again, you know, most of these moments that we're talking about are nearly all of them are in times of either tragedy or impending tragedy or just having finished a tragedy. There's very, you know, as we say, there are lighthearted moments, of course, and that's what keeps the show from, you know, it's what makes the show is the fact that there are light moments and they still have fun and there's still banter and everything, but most of this is has a shadow hanging over it. And, you know, again, the other episode you have to mention in season three is Mystery Spot, which is just a perfect example of tragedy and humour and, you know, Dean dying again and again and again and what that does to Sam. And it's
And the fact that, you know, like Sam's just getting worse and worse and worse and starts looking really bad. But I just love how Dean ends up, you know, can see that, oh, actually he's taking, you know, he's really poking fun at him. And then he really sees how devastated Sam is. Yes. And he's suddenly like, oh, okay.
I'm
going to listen. Let, you know, tell me about it. And he comes right on board with it and trusts that his brother's not batshit crazy. And you know, so... Yeah, I think that there's some really nice moments in there. Or even just like Sam waking up and like watching Dean gargle and stuff and like just gobsmacked that he's still there. It's pretty funny.
And of course, I have to mention the bit where they talk at the same time because that's absolutely delicious and delightful. And I still don't know how they did that without cracking up. Good.
I bet they didn't do it without cracking up. That's how they didn't do it without cracking up. But no, that is very good. I wonder how many takes. Has anybody ever asked them that?
I have to. I'm sure people asked them that back, you
back
know,
in the day.
Back in the day around that time. So, what was it, 2007, 8, early 8.
They started the cons in 2008, didn't they?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do remember. I do remember it being talked about. But I might take that on as a little project to hunt down and see if I can find.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about that because you'd think it would take a while to get right.
You would think that because, yes, anyway, excellent scene.
It is a good scene. And that's that episode, funnily enough, now, even though I still find it highly amusing, it makes me more sad.
As
time has gone on. I think at the time I thought it was hilarious, and now as time has gone on, I'm going, this is really sad, my God.
Well, of course, at the time, you know, we had Sam die once, briefly, but of course the reality of them dying over and over again hadn't hit home, and the impact it would have on one or the other if the other one was dead for a length of time, of course, is something that we've experienced repeatedly ourselves. I mean, we've almost become the Sam in Mystery Spot as we've watched them both die again and again and again and turned into single-minded Sam at the end.
Yeah. Exactly.
Trying to stop them dying.
Stop it. Oh my gosh.
And, of course, Dean did die at the end of season three. Leads us into season four. I think I have to mention, I mean, Lazarus Rising remains probably my favourite episode.
Yeah,
and
one of my favorites too.
The boys' reunion in that, the giving back of the amulet.
Yeah, I've got that down. Hug, amulet return.
And I'll throw in, I do love Ruby's line of, are you two together? Which,
what?
You know,
no,
we know she knows who they are.
I
and
know.
But it's just so, it's again.
We didn't know that in that moment, though, when we first saw that episode.
We did
not.
No,
we did
of course
not know that.
Not.
It was a surprise when she came out.
But, you know, I think those moments in that episode, particularly going into a season where the boys are pretty much at odds and I can't think of the word, disengaged, disenfranchised, split apart for one reason or the other for the whole season. You know, it's nice that we started at that point. In fact, they're sort of pretty much torn apart for two seasons.
Mostly.
So people complain about the boys these days, and it's like, back in my day,
when I was watching season four, 19 tickety boo.
Back in my season, we had season four and five, and they didn't talk. Don't give me that. No lovey-dovey chick flick moments. Honey, run up. And then we ended Swan Song with Sam in the pit.
Oh, my God.
We didn't get them back together until bloody halfway through season six. So don't give me this, or the boys are arguing for two episodes.
Oh, God.
Shit. God, young people these days, get off my lawn. Fans these days, they can't deal with the pain.
I know. Tough it up, geez.
Yeah. Suck it up, buttercup. God.
All right. So season four.
We were forged in the fire of seasons four and five.
Man, they were pretty damn fiery.
Sorry. Why don't you pick a moment?
Me too. I was Lazarus Rising, Hug and Amulet Return. I also had in Lucifer Rising, that's right, isn't it? Yes, when Dean finally, you know, was like, I don't care what's happening, I'm going to reach out for my brother, and tried to make that call and did the whole we're brothers thing, you know, even though Sam didn't get it. I thought that was a really, really good moment as well. And I like to see that, you know, I like those moments where it doesn't matter what's happening. It doesn't matter how angry they are at each other, how hurt they are with each other. There still seems to be always that moment where one of them reaches out and repairs and tries to repair it. And in this case, it was Dean. And, of course, you couldn't prevent him in the end when he found out what was happening. There was nothing was going to stop him getting to his brother. And, you know, even though he was too late to stop Lucifer Rising, he was not basically too late to try and reclaim Sam from what the fate that was about to erupt out of the floor at him. So I really liked that moment at the end of Lucifer. I really liked that episode. And there was just a couple of little tiny things. This is really weird, but in Monster Movie, I love it when they start talking about the Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, yes.
And sounds like
your favourite movie was.
Yeah. No.
At the beginning.
No, at the beginning. Yeah, that was funny as well.
Oh, you saw the movie without me.
Yeah, you saw the movie without me. You were in hell. And I really love it when Dean goes, big pretzel, and just walks off. And Sam's face is just like, oh, my brother. You know, he's just got this real, I can't believe him, but it's just this face of love, you know, and I just love that little moment. And Dean's like, ADD, shiny, big pretzel, off he goes. Yeah.
Well, he's a bit like that, you know, and it does play into him having come back from hell, because he's like, oh, big pretzel, bar wench with big boobs and big beer.
I can get
I can lose my virginity all over again.
And then the bit at the end where he's like, you know, what would you move? Would you pick? Oh, you'll never guess it. Yeah, I would. I know. Nah, you won't. Porky's too. What? And it's just so good. You know, it's like he really knows him, you know, and Sam's like looking at him like, I know you, dude. You know, there's no way I'm not going to get that. It's this is really random too, but in Yellow Fever, which is another fun episode, I really love Sam telling Dean to stop picking at his cut. No, he's like, I know this sounds really strange, but they're just sitting there in this really serious situation, and Dean's picking at his ghost sickness rash on his arm, and Sam kicks him and is like, stop picking at it, and it's just this really cute moment. And it just always makes me laugh every time I see that one, because it's like, Satcha, you do that. Well, you do that to your brother. You'd say, stop it. Leave that alone. Stop picking at it. And it's little things like that that I love that they pepper through the show.
Yeah.
What else have you got in season four?
What have I got? I've actually got a scene from Chris Angel as a douchebag.
Ooh, interesting. Oh, I know the one. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So
I wouldn't actually look at that episode because I'm not a fan of it. But, yes, that's a beautiful scene.
Yeah, so they're talking about Sam starts by talking about, you know, do you think we'll be doing this when we're 60, basically, and, you know, Dean's low, you know, it ends bloody or sad, and that's the life. And I suppose because it's the first, I think it's the first time they've really talked about their future at all, even though it's a brief conversation. And of course, it is the thing that it catapults Sam back into to Ruby and to, as we later find out, drinking demon blood again, and that he's doing it because he doesn't want, you know, him and Dean, or and Dean particularly, you know, to end up that way. And so, you know, he's thinking that if he can, you know, kill Lucifer and stop all that, then that won't happen. And I think it's important because, you know, that's not made explicit. You know, he never has a speech to Dean about "I'm doing this for us" or anything like that. But so much back, you know, from season three onwards, Sam's relationship with Ruby is, you know, is motivated by Sam's wanting to do things for Dean, and also, you know, as I talked about before, wanting to prove himself to Dean as being the one that can save the day. So there's, you know, it's not all altruistic, but yeah, it's just what it, because they've so rarely talk about the future in more than three words.
That is a powerful moment in that episode.
The other one for me, and it's not so much what gets said, but just is the fight in When the Levee Breaks,
which is so sad.
No holes barred and angry on both sides, and
hurt. It's so hurt.
Yeah. And as I said, the words don't really matter, but you know, they are just at that point. And on the other side, there's such, you know, passion there, if you like, as well. And the very fact that, you know, Dean ends up repeating words that John said. And again, I think it just encapsulates how much of their relationship is, you know, never gets a chance to get worked out because they're always having to stop and save the world, or, you know, do something, and that these things build up, and this is a, you know, a powder keg that explodes in this moment, and it's just raw and brutal and very hard to watch.
Yeah, it is really hard to watch. Just the whole thing, even when, you know, like Sam's challenging him, you know, don't say that to me about being a monster, and Dean's crying, and, you know, the whole scene is so hard.
Yes, and complex too. It's not, yeah, they're not just hitting each other because they think the other one's wrong. There's so much pain and desperation in there, and I just think it's I like it when, as you can tell from some of the moments I'm picking, I like the darker moments too, because I think they're what
I do too. Yeah,
lead us, you know, they make the brighter moments, well, they're what lead us there, because they have to go through this to get there, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah, me too. I really like that one as well. Okay, so are we moving on?
Yes, season five.
Season five. Okay, so I was a bit better on season five, and I only picked out two instead of 22. And for me, season five, the end, which is one of my favourite episodes, and the speech at the end that Dean gives to Sam, you know, we're all we've got, but we're more than that, we keep each other human. But I just really like that, regardless of the fact that they are the oil and fire of heaven and hell, they still end up, you know, having to be together, and they will, you know, eventually screw destiny right in the face and, you know, fight together. And I love that moment, but I also really love it that, you know, Dean basically says, you know, we'll make our own destiny, and Sam goes, do we have any, like, you know, like, we have any other choice? And it's, yes, kind of like they're saying the opposite thing of each other. So,
yes,
you know, Dean's like, we're gonna forge ahead and make our own path, and Sam's like saying almost exactly the opposite thing. And it's such a powerful speech. It's like, oh my gosh, this is really, really wonderful speech from Dean, you know, bringing them back together and saying, we're all we've got, we keep each other human. And then it ends in this little weird little note, and you go, oh, nuts, you know?
Yeah.
Jeez, they still can't get it together. But I think that moment's just, it's a lovely kind of bringing them together again, and it's a beautiful way to do it. But then once again shows how, you know, they're in very different places mentally, and, you know, how they're approaching what's going on with them. And it's just really well done, which you'd expect because it's Mr. Edlund.
Yeah, and again, you know, the episode is so beautifully top and tailed because, you know, it starts out with Sam reaching out to Dean. Mm. And Dean trying to sort of encapsulate, so, you know, this, what is it, what it, love, family, whatever it is between us, sort of struggling with that, but knowing again that, you know, from not only between them, but it's also the thing that everyone else in the universe tries to use against them as well.
Yeah, but, exactly.
You know, the macro place of their relationship is also both a, you know, their strength and their weakness, not only whatever it causes, you know, personally between them. And I know, you know,
they're each other's Achilles heel.
Yeah, and I know Sarah Gamble once spoke about, you know, writing the relationship as a separate character. You know, what's Sam doing, what's Dean doing, what's the relationship to?
Yeah, yeah.
And in a way, that's what the, you know, everyone, you know, the Crowleys of the world do so well is look at how they can use that, or can, you know, at the very least have to consider that in what they're doing. I'd also say even though it's not Sam, that final scene in the with Lucifer in Sam's body and Dean. I know it's not a bromance, but it's.
It is in a way with Dean not leaving Sam. He's not going to leave.
Well,
him.
Yeah, and also
that episode.
I always say that I think Ackles. Oh, I called him Ackles. Jensen's choice.
That's okay, you can call him Ackles.
I called him Ackles. His choice to play that speech as one of grief rather than anger when he's, you know, he's speaking back to Lucifer. I mean, that's that. Yeah. It's his grief for Sam that's driving
it
him
is,
there.
You know.
It's not his anger at Lucifer, and I just think that's such a telling choice there because it makes that scene about Sam and Dean as much as it is about Dean and Lucifer.
And it's even like earlier than that when Cass says, you know, I don't know why you're going to this field because all you're going to see is your brother being killed.
Yes.
And Dean goes, well, I ain't gonna let him die alone. And I, you know, that's, and he's not, even if that means he doesn't make it through, he's not yes. gonna leave his brother on his own, you know. And we see that later again with Sam,
yes,
in it's saying exactly the same thing, basically. But yeah, I love that, and also the beginning of Swan Song. Well, Swan Song's one of my favorite episodes.
Yes, yeah.
With the junkyard talk, you know.
Exactly.
It's beautiful when he says, you know, looking after you, it's what I do. It's more than that. It's who I am. And you know, and he says to Sam, you know, but you know, if this is what you want, I'll back your play. And then in the way he says, is this what you want? You know, there's just this such kind of question and pain in Dean's voice as he's doing what's impossible for him, really, to let Sam make a death decision, you know. And you can tell how hard that is on Dean, but he feels they're at a point where they've got no other choice, and Sam's probably going to do it regardless, and he'd
yes.
rather do it with Dean standing next to him.
And, you know, it again echoes right back to Scarecrow, and we were talking about the speech in the car where, you know, Dean basically lets Sam go and says, you know, if you want to hunt down Dad, you can do it, and that, you know, it's not something he's happy with, but, you know, at the end of the day, he wants to respect Sam's autonomy. He knows yeah. that's important to Sam. It just butts up against.
It's just hard for him to do.
Yes, yeah. Oh, God, there's some other wonderful moments. I mean, of course, we have to talk about Dark Side of the Moon and the...
That one's painful.
Well, yes, but at least, at the very least, let's focus on the fireworks scene.
Oh, because... the fireworks scene is absolutely beautiful. That's one of those scenes where you can barely get through ever without crying. It's just so gorgeous.
That's just, you know, and it's poignant because it has its happy moments, but, you know, it's couched in something darker.
Darkens.
I'd also say, you know, Point of No Return, which is another favourite of mine.
Yeah.
both where we have the scene where Sam goes down to the panic room to and says to, you know, tells Dean they know where, you know, they're going after Zachariah and
you're coming with
Adam and you're coming with us. And, you know, and Sam's basically, I know you'll make the right decision when the time comes.
And he does.
And he does with that absolutely gorgeous, wink when they're in the green room and it's all going down. And that's just, that moment particularly is just a gorgeous one. But, you know, it only comes about because of, you know, the faith and trust Sam puts and shows to Dean, based really on something he, you know, because Bobby and Cass don't trust Dean at this point.
No.
Neither of them do. So, you know, they have to go on Sam's trust of Dean at, you know, as they go ahead with this quest. And another favourite episode, that one.
Yeah, that is a good one. All right, season six. What have you got? Yes.
Season six. Oh, look, just because I'm a bitch, I did want to mention the fake hug in Exile on Main Street. Someone posted a twit pic of it the other day as a you know, Winchester hug, and it's like, I cannot look at that
anymore and
own that as a hug, because you know that it's that soulless hug. Sam, and that half smile he has is not, I've got my brother back. No. It's a lie. It's all a lie.
It's him trying to be Sam. It's him wearing, you know, faking Sam. He's being fake Sam.
And yes, so, but I did mention that because it's just, and actually the end of the episode, there's a moment as Sam drives off and Dean goes up to wave and then goes down again.
That's so sad. That heart breaks my heart, that moment. It's like the little awkward, oh, it's awful. He goes, oh, it's sad. I don't even want to think about it.
Thank you.
I've got a couple. I really love the episode And Then There Were None. I find that I love these ones that are like really claustrophobic and you're sort of just in one scene. And I love the scene, including the music, where they go off, they all split up and go off to try and find Dean's with them at this point, so hang on, it must be after that I love it. Anyway, it's like it's actually after that. I love that scene where they all split off and that music, and then when they find Dean and then they're all traversing through trying to, you know, are they looking for the granddad at that point?
Yeah,
they're looking for the granddad, and they get separated, and like the door slams between Sam and Dean, and they just stand on either side of the door screaming each other's name.
That's a classic.
And I just think it's just like, so them. My God, anybody in their vicinity of them would just stand there and roll their eyes, I'm sure, because they just stand there, Dean, Sam, Dean, you know, through the door, you know, watch your back, okay, you know, it's just like, and I just love it when they yell out for each other, you know, every time they get separated. And it doesn't matter, you know, I was watching something in season 9, and while I was doing research for this, and I was thinking, you know, that never stopped, even when they're angry with each other, you know, even through season 9, when after, you know, it all comes out and there's all those really harsh conversations, they're still yelling out each other's name at the drop of a hat when they're, you know, making sure that they're okay. And that is one of my all-time favourite Sam Dean yelling at each other moments, is through that big, great big door when they get separated. And they both sort of like spin them. Oh, my God, we've been split up. And I love in The Man Who Knew Too Much when Sam says he's not going to leave his brother alone out there.
Yes.
You know, he has that, he's faced with that choice, you know, from Hell Sam, you know. This is going to destroy you. And he's like, well, I'm not going to leave my brother alone out there. And, you know, that is something that we hear them both say in some way or another throughout the series. And I think that was a really great moment. And I also think in that episode, when Sam is actually catatonic and Dean sitting with him, and he has such faith in him that he'll come to, that he ends up, he puts, or is that, actually it's the next episode, sorry, and he puts the gun under, like next to Sam, like Sam's, yes. And he's like, here it is for you when, you know, you'll know, leaves, tells him where he's going and leaves notes and
yep.
the gun and everything, because he just has that much belief, I guess, or hope in that Sam will wake up, and I really love that moment too. And I can't help but think about Dean shopping for Sam in Frontierland. And going out and buying them Western gear. So much so I wrote a fanfic about it, but never mind.
Okay, a couple of mine. This is really just a moment in you Can't Handle the Truth, and it's when, you know, with Dean's increasingly discomforted, like he knows something's wrong with Sam, he doesn't know what it is, you know, he can't pin it down. We've just coming off the back of Live Free and Twihard, and he's starting, you know, he's suspecting, you know, was Sam, you know, there when I got turned, and why did, and then the whole truth spell thing comes about, and he thinks that's going to be a way that, you know, reveals that something is wrong. You know, Sam's going to tell him the truth, and of course, because it doesn't work on him, Sam tells him what he thinks is, Dean wants to hear. And there's that moment when, like, Dean has this realization that maybe there's nothing wrong with Sam, maybe they're just yeah. grown apart, maybe it's just, you know, they've spent all this time apart and they're different. And I think so cleverly, as the show often does, it comes down to just a very mundane, you know, the fear is in a relationship of growing apart from someone, not because they're possessed and not because they're evil or anything, but maybe they're just growing apart. And that moment, I think you just see Dean's face drop of like, fuck, you know.
Yeah.
There appears to be no explanation for what's going on with Sam. So that one gets me. clap your hands if you believe the scene in the bar where Dean's having a go at Sam for screwing the hippie chick while he was being abducted, and saying, you know, you need to sit in the dark and feel the loss. Sam's like, but can't I have sex and be in the dark? Like,
that's really good. No,
I love that. I love that, and it's one of those. I know it's soulless, Sam, but
it's a pretty funny moment.
Dean's lying about it. You're supposed to sit in the dark and suffer. I mean, because that sums up their relationship.
And, yeah,
it's hilarious.
Yeah, that is pretty funny.
It's hilarious. We do get a lovely reunion hug, of course, when Sam does get his soul back.
Yes,
his hugs all round.
Yeah, it's a bit awkward for Bobby, that hug, but
yes,
the awkward Bobby hug.
Concentrate on the Sam and Dean hug.
But that is a really good one. It's a good eyes closed hug. Yeah, it's a nice one.
That's a full-on one.
Yeah.
Okay, season seven.
Season seven, my favourite, I've got a few little ones, but my favourite moment is in Time After Time when they find each other across time. Oh!
That's epic romance.
It's so good. You know, when Dean figures out, he'll write this note and he'll pop it in here and he'll scratch Sam's name into the skirting board, and Sam will see it.
Lying there about to go to sleep.
And he'll see his name, and it's just like, yay! You know, it's like 40-something years apart, and they could still find each other. I loved that moment, stupidly loved that moment so much. I thought that was really great. And then there were some, like, little ones too that I wrote down. I love in, I think it's Hello Cruel World, where Dean's wrapping Sam's hand, and there's just something really intimate about, he checks his wound and,
yep.
You know, like gets the alcohol and pours on it or whatever, and then just sits there and like looks after his brother's wounded hand, and it's just a really
intimate moment between them, as and it gives him water, tells him to get hydrated, and it's just it's Dean being Dean, but it's looking after his brother who's injured and obviously something horrible wrong with him. But it's a very, I find that a really intimate moment.
And it's interesting, we see that becomes a bit of an image repeated, because we see it again in Sacrifice in the next season at the end of it, with the sort of the wrapping of the hand as well. That's a gorgeous moment. I would throw in, Death's Door, even though I suppose it's Bobby's memory of the boys on the couch having video night and arguing about, you know, licorice. And that again, one of those domestic moments that
we don't get to see.
No, rarely get to see. Actually, we forgot to mention the laundromat in The Monster at the End the Monster at the End of the Book back in season 4.
They weren't in their boxes.
No, which apparently Jensen has suggested. Go, Jensen.
We're with you, Jensen. We're behind you on that one.
Yes, but that lovely family moment, which you just think, I want a whole episode of them having video nights.
That would be awesome. It's like they always say that. Well, you wouldn't want us just sitting around talking. Yeah, we would. We would love that.
We did gorgeously get them watching Game of Thrones later. Yeah, that was so cool. The other one was Plucky Penny Whistle's Magic Menagerie and the giant slinky at the end.
Oh, the giant slinky is great.
Teasing Sam with the clown doll. I mean,
I actually like that one too, when Dean's telling him, you know, is if it bleeds, you can kill it on the phone. He's like going, are you still scared of Sammy? You know, like it's real sort of, Sammy, are you still scared of clowns thing? And it's really cute little conversation. And Sam's like, no, I'm fine. You know, the giant slinky's awesome.
That's very lovely.
And I think that the condom talk or in the Slice Girls, when Sam's like having that awkward conversation about, but how did you knock her up, man? Like, when are you using protection? Yes. Wait a minute. And it's just like this weird, awkward conversation. I really like that too, because that would be a real brothery sort of thing, I think.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Let's see then, season 8. Oh, again, a lot of angst in season 8.
There's a lot of angst.
A lot of angst in season 8. Not a lot of love in the first half of the season, really.
No, I didn't pick anything in the first half. So I did actually, I did, and people would think this is controversial, but I did actually pick the couch scene at the end of Torn and Frayed.
Yeah.
When they essentially chose each other, and they're just sitting on the couch, and there's just kind of this moment. They've made their choice, like it or lump it, and they're probably both lumping it at that point in time, but they've made their choice, and they're sitting there, you know, Dean comes over with their chili and beers, they're watching boxing or something, I can't remember, and they sort of just sort of little sideways glance at each other like, yep, okay, this is our lot. But there's also something in that you can see what they've chosen.
Yeah. Well, and the very fact that
they've chosen
each other,
which I thought was great. A lot of people didn't, but I was like, yay, thank God. But there's something in that moment that even though they look miserable and it's uncomfortable, there's something comfortable in it as well, that they've made that choice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've moved forward and they've moved forward to each other.
Yeah.
But it's not a happy choice. Both given up something and someone, and you know, those weren't easy decisions either. So again, you know, as is usual for the Winchesters, you know, the path forward's never easy. My next one was Trial and Error.
Yep, yep.
The two speeches the boys each have to each other about, you know, why they should do the trials, basically. And again, we've got, you know, Dean saying, you know, basically, let me do it. I'm disposable. This is the way I'm going to die. You know, I'm going to die hunting, fighting anyway.
You have your picket life fence. That picket life fence.
Picket life fence. and you know, again, I think that. It ties back to the fact that is what Sam has given up to be with, ostensibly given up to be with Dean, whether it would have turned out that way or not. You know, and it's Dean's wrecking. It's not only Dean going, I don't matter, I'll die, but it's also he is acknowledging, you know, really beyond how rejected and hurt he felt that Sam hadn't, you know, hadn't looked for him or hadn't found him, that's again comes back to that's what he would like for Sam. And then, of course, you know, turns around at the end with Sam saying, well, you know, I want to survive. I want you to survive. I want us both to survive.
Yeah. Like, let me take you to that light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And that this point, you know, and I think it's right in that Sam feels that he has more hope about life than Dean has. And again, I think that's a basic difference in their personality because, you know, and I don't think it's a Dean wants to die, but he wants Sam to live more than he does, and he sees the inevitability of the path that he's on. But yeah, for both of them, these are both really significant speeches, I think.
Yep, I agree. And one of my favourite moments was surprise hug.
Oh, at the end of Pac-Man Fever.
Yes, known forever to me as surprise hug. when Dean comes in after hugging Charlie. He just hugs a lot in season 8, I must say.
Oh, yes,
because there was the hug at the end of Taxi Driver 2 when Sam comes back.
I did officially call it a hug orgy of a season.
It was a hug orgy, and I even told Jensen that he was a hug monster in season 8. But the one at the end of the Taxi Driver is great as well because Dean's like so happy to have Sam back, and then he finds out Benny's not come back, and he's like trying not to, you know, look all sad. They've got Bobby out, and he's like, oh, well, that, you know, we've got Bobby, that's great, and he's trying to suck it up or be all brave. And I really love that moment too. But yeah, the surprise hug, it surprised me, it surprised Sam, you know, like it was, you know, Sam was like getting on the defensive. I know I did. I shouldn't have. I'm not, you know. And then Dean just engulfs him in a great big hug. And I love that hug. It wasn't a I've just come back from the dead hug or
no, it was
a nearly dead hug. You know, it was just a hug.
Yes. And it was just about valuing their relationship. Yeah. In that moment, and I think that's important in, you know, as we go forward and into Sacrifice and into season 9, that, you know, we needed that hug too.
I love that hug so much. I really love that hug a lot. It's a special hug because it is. It was just him going, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, and it was also about him letting go and not letting go, you know, because he'd said to Charlie he's not going to let go. And it was about him doing both, I think, in one fell swoop. But it was, you know, and as you say, just valuing what he has.
Mm. But interestingly, of course, you know, and as we've been talking about, there are two sides to every hug. And, of course, as we see not long afterwards in Sacrifice, in some ways – and I'm not saying that hug specifically, but, you know, it doesn't take away from the fact that Sam feels that he's failed Dean, that he's not, you know, he's not the brother Dean wants, or he's not good enough for Dean. And, you know, that there's, you know, there's so much wonderful stuff in Sacrifice, but that moment when when Dean realises what Sam's been carrying for the last, you know, well, all his life, but particularly the last couple of years of just feeling not good enough and feeling that, you know, and you can probably go back to, you know, Dean sold his soul for me, Dean went to hell for me and I couldn't stop it. And then, started the apocalypse. And then
everything he said in The Great Escapist too, because he'd always felt it. He'd always felt like he didn't belong, like something was not right. And, you know, so it goes back even further. And, you know, you kind of wonder, if what John knew, you know, because John knew, when did John figure it out, you know, and how did he accidentally impart that onto his son, you know,
the fact that he had demons hanging around him since he was in school. So John,
you know, accidentally or whatever, probably made him feel, you know.
Oh, well, I think, Sam, you know, supernatural things aside, and I'm going to go back. Sometimes I get stuck on things. I'm going to go back to that conversation in the car in Scarecrow, where Sam, you know, talks about how would you know how I felt because, you know, Jess has only just died. I always thought that also revealed the fact that, you know, Dean and John had a bit of a dyad going where they both experienced the loss of Mary because they knew her, she was important in their life, and they had a bond formed by that grief that Sam would have always been excluded from. And because he didn't know her, and so what, any, you know, everything else aside, that would have been the fact that they knew and loved Mary and grieved her in a way he couldn't, I think would have always made him feel you know, different and in a way, like he'd failed because he wasn't part of that. So, yeah, look, I think sacrifice and then going through to, you know, Dean saving Sam at the end is just and it's interesting because how did what came in season 9 change how you view that final scene in season 8?
How did – you know, I didn't – it doesn't actually change how I saw that scene. I didn't feel that Dean tricked or lied to Sam. I still don't, and I question if Sam really does either, you know, in true moments. But because it didn't actually, I didn't look at it and then go, Dean was being self. I think he made a choice in that moment that, you know, he would have made 3 seasons ago. It wouldn't have mattered. He was choosing his brother over everything, which he's always going to do. That screwed up everything later on, but that's just how it happens, you know, just the same as when he sold his soul, you know.
There's always a price.
There's always a price, and the price was what happened to Sam. The price was what happened to Kevin. The price was, you know, the world that they ended up living in post that. But I don't disbelieve his – the value of what he said to Sam in that moment, or I don't think he was being untruthful or trickery. There was no trickery there. For me, it hasn't actually changed at all the sentiment of it, even with the conversation in The Purge, because I never felt that Sam actually would not do that. I always felt it was Sam being hurtful and Sam being in pain and wanting to lash out and make sure Dean hurt as much as he hurt, and the only way he knows how to do that is to, you know, say that he's not going to do for Dean what he knows Dean would always do for him. And I'm not saying there that you know, Sam, I think Sam would do that, and I'm not saying that, you know, Dean should have done that, and that that Sam, you know, should suck it up and go, oh, my brother saved me, you know, but I don't think Sam wouldn't do that if put in that same situation, and so for me, I didn't feel like sacrifice was diminished. I was worried. I know a lot of people do feel like that, and I was worried at one point it was going in that direction. But post, you know, certainly by the time we got to the end of season 9 and how season 9 ended, and you know the words that it ended with, I have no doubt in my mind, and that those words that were said in that church were true. And I feel like it's just as powerful as it was then as it is today. Oh, no, the other way around. Sorry. As it was, is then. Anyway, you know what I'm saying.
It's still,
you know,
really, it's still really, really good.
It's still really, really, really good. And it still really resonates with, I think, one. I was happy that they both got it out. You know, I was really, really happy that Sam said, you've made me feel like shit so much because of how you treat me. And, you know, Dean really, you know, say to him, how could you even think that, you know, because obviously he's not aware that he's doing that. We do that kind of things all the time in life. We don't realize what we're doing, and if we're sometimes hurting people or they're misinterpreting what we're doing as something else, it happens all the time. And Dean didn't realize that his behavior towards Sam was making Sam feel less. And, you know, Dean didn't realize that Sam didn't think he was the most important thing. And so, you know, they actually both got to say at least a little bit of what they wanted to say. And unfortunately, it was not a conversation that could be continued. But
of course,
because, as you said, you know, we go back to where we've always been, where they start to get on to the right track. And we think, oh, thank God, they're, you know, they're moving forward together in a good way. And then something awful happens, and which throws it all asunder again. And, you know, that happened at the beginning of season 9. But no, for me, how about for you? For me, sacrifice still stands as a powerful brother scene and a truthful brother scene.
I think it's also the foundation for season 9.
Absolutely.
And I don't think you can have season 9 be so painful without what happened in...
And the hope that season 8 left us with.
Yeah. So no, I definitely.
Do you remember how hopeful I was at the end of season 8? You laughed at me so much.
I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
At least I was a bit nicer at the end of this season when you were distraught. I didn't say. I was distraught.
I was distraught for months. So.
I know, but I thought there's no point in saying, because I didn't know. Well, none of us know quite yet how glorious Demon Dean's going to be, but I think that took some of the sting out of it for you.
Definitely took a little bit of sting out. Doesn't take the sting out of the death, but it well, for me, it was never about the demon thing anyway, no. Because even though
but
I thought that was
bad. But he had to die to become a demon.
It's the dead thing that just sets my teeth on edge, but... that blade going in. And the last thing I needed was Jensen to keep acting it out in front of me when he was answering my question in the mangroves. Just stop doing that, please. But yeah, so for me, sacrifice is still that powerful ending, you know, let it go, little brother, and holding him and, you know, wrapping his hand. And
really that whole...
Sam kind of almost just melting into his brother and then carrying him out and them sitting in the dirt together and together against the Impala, just the two of them. And you
watching
know,
the angels
the
fall.
Only home they've ever known until the bunker, watching the angels fall. You know, the whole thing is still so powerful.
Yeah.
And it is almost perfect.
Yeah. No, it's a brilliant... that last third, really, of that episode, as well as, you know, the whole Crowley and Sam interaction and Crowley's HBO speech and everything is just, amazing television. And season nine.
I really love season 9. And I must admit, I'm like you. I find a lot of... strange enjoyment in a lot of the powerfully painful moments because there's always something else going on. And you know, I enjoy the depth of that these characters have now. I enjoy the depth of their relationship and the depth of the story. I you know, like from who they are now and what they are to each other and even how they are to each other, which is not always great, to where they began, you know, I love them now, you know, like I loved them at the beginning, but now they're like, and it is part of the fact that, you know, I've been on this journey with them and they've become, as one might have guessed, you know, a part of my fabric. And, you know, I love them with a fiery passion. And so obviously, you know, I'm kind of dedicated, but I really love these men that they've become, and even though their relationship is screwed up on so many levels, it's also not. And you know, I like how they've, you know, they kind of always manage to be together, and just this is the most important thing for them, and they will do it regardless of the shit that they throw at each other. They will still do it. And, you know, sometimes you think, well, maybe this isn't a good thing. You should maybe walk away. But you know that it is in some way a good thing. I don't know. But and so season 9 for me, even though there was, you know, a lot of pain around the whole Gadriel thing, and, you know, like I am doing a rewatch, I was like, man, I have finished my rewatch, Jules. But I did get my DVD a couple of weeks before you.
Thank you. I don't want you to make it sound to our fans as if, sorry, our listeners. As if, yes, it's not. I got them yesterday. I'm sorry I haven't watched 24 hours of television yet.
You've been sleeping, Jules, please. but I was really, because I mean, we watch it, you know, week to week, and then you watch that episode probably like four times before the next episode. But there is always that kind of disjointedness that you get to the storytelling that you get when you're watching a show over a season.
Oh, it's a different experience.
It's totally different.
Just sitting down and watching it all binging at once was just glorious to watch the story unfold like that.
And it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Like season nine, I was like, man, this is one of the strongest pieces of storytelling I think that the show has done, and it's really coherent and really it all ties through. It's really lovely. So and though it's like quite painful, there was a lot of lightness as well in the season sort of mixed into it, and it was a good one. I really enjoyed it. So but I'm like you, I do quite like the dark moments. Like I really actually dug that speech at the end of The Purge, like especially like watching it months later and knowing, you know, what we know now. So watching it without kind of going, ouchie, wowa, I really enjoyed it. And just I think almost because the writing was nice and the acting was so beautiful that I just loved that moment. And it's not so much for a brother moment as just a moment in the show I thought was really quite spectacular.
Well, a couple of my lighter ones was the Game of Thrones slumber party with Charlie.
Yeah, that was gorgeous.
Where we do get to see Sam's room. And, you know, and
I hope he's hung that hanging there kitty poster by now.
And the whole, you know, and Sam's read the books or is reading the books. And I mean, just that's just delightful. I mean, I just love them.
It was good.
All snuggled in there and, you know, on Sam's, you know, he hasn't got much in there, but he's got a giant plasma screen.
Nevertheless, that's important.
I know this is a favourite moment of yours, which is the fetch moment in Dog Dean Afternoon.
One of my all-time favourite moments. It was so well done. So it's so subtle that it's like on the second time, you go, wait a minute, he's playing fetch.
Yeah.
And when that dawned on me while I was watching it, I think I laughed for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was, and it's so well done, you know, it's beautiful. That whole scene with the barking at the postman and, you know, the fetch is perfect.
It's just that's a gorgeous, gorgeous moment. And Bad Boys, I think.
I wrote Bad Boys, all of it.
yes, all of it, but particularly that final scene of when John's returned with Sam to pick Dean up, and he, you know, Sonny has to tell him, and he's, you know, about to get ready to go to the dance, and looks out the window and there's Sammy hanging out of the Impala. I mean, just that whole thing is just...
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And the speech at the end, you know, when Sam's trying to thank Dean and Dean's like, I know what you're talking about. You know, once again, it sort of harks back to the earlier moments we're talking about where, you know, do you want a prom, you know, moments gone. You know, trying to make each other, you know, trying to downplay the poignancy of the moment. And I also loved in that, you know, the surprises that Sam was getting to find out about his brother.
Yes, yes.
And I really liked that Sam was getting backstory.
Yes. And I I was lucky enough to interview Kevin Parks about directing the episode, and he actually said that final scene with young Dean and Sonny had a number of the crew in tears, which...
Yeah. The game was great.
Yeah, says a lot, and I hope we get. I always, you know, like to see the wee Chesters.
Yeah.
On a side note, I noticed that Colin Ford, having turned 18, is finally a guest at Creation Con in Chicago.
I think that's so cool. Like, I'm like,
cannot wait.
Vegas, because I'm doing Vegas, and I'm just like, great. I think that's really cool. He's done a few eps. He's, you know, he's a very important part. He's Sam Winchester.
Oh, I can't wait to see him and hear
awesome
what he's got to say about, you know.
They really have to do a Jared and Colin photo op. Don't you reckon?
Oh,
like I would pee myself. But maybe not in front of them. Because that would be awkward.
That would be awkward and possibly not make for the photo. But I can't wait for that. And I always love the flashbacks and the getting to find out more about their backstory, because it's still, you know, we've still got so much more to learn about them, and they've got still more to learn about each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yes, that was definitely those final scenes were
very poignant.
Yes.
I love the hospital scene in Sharp Teeth.
Yes.
I love that scene. I thought the whole awkwardness when Sam arrives and Dean's kind of not talking and Sam actually breaks the ice. And then I love them sitting outside the bathroom sort of catching up with each other. And there's almost note of jealousy from each other that one of them's working with Crowley, the other one's working with Cass, and there's like, what? And, you know, and they're basically facing each other but not facing each other. And it's, I love that scene. It's really talks a lot to, you know, how mad they are at each other, but they're still so close because they're brothers, you know, and they've got that closeness, but you can see that they're angry, but they're still really close. It's, I really like that scene a lot. That's one of my favorite scenes of the season as well. And, I was going to say that apart from obviously the end, but we'll get there in a minute. There was a lot of times that no matter how mad Sam was with Dean, he was still like, you know, there for him all the time. Yeah. He was still running. Yeah.
When they're on cases, and I was thinking of, is it Blade Runners? When Dean gets captured, and then also when they're both captured.
Like, he's got Dean, you know, and he's running back through the forest.
Alex, Annie, Alexis, Anne, of course, when Sam's getting drained of his blood in the kitchen, and Dean hulks out.
when Kevin's haunting and like Dean yells out for Sam, that's very gravelly, Sam, and Sam comes like all hair flowing in the wind and, you know, like charging down the hall yelling for his brother's name to try and find him, you know, and yeah, there's lots of moments like that through, or Sweet Potatoes, you know, like when Dean's in The Purge, when he's on the sack of sweet potatoes and yes. Sam's like manically trying to find him. So I really liked that, you know, we saw how so much anger and pain and, you know, confusion on behalf of Dean, because he just couldn't figure it all out. And Sam's just so pissed he can't even. And yet the whole way through, they're still basically, you know, got each other's back all the way. Mm-hmm.
Even that quiet moment at the end of Mother's Little Helper when Sam comes back after investigating the Abaddon-related case and sits down to help Dean with the research, having, you know, sort of agreed now that Abaddon, you know, is a priority.
And Dean opens his beer bottle. No, wait, that was the gag reel. I get so confused.
It should have been in the show. They should have put that in, I think.
Yeah. And of course, there's the moments too where Sam talks Dean down from the bloody rage of the blade, you know, and the only thing that brings him out of that is Sam.
Yes.
Sam's voice talking him out. You know, telling him to put it down, stop, you know, it's okay, you know, and he's got this drone in his head and this craziness going on, and but it's Sam who can bring him back down again.
And then the finale.
Wow. And the whole I'm proud of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty perfect.
And even before then, when they're about to go in, before
punches Sam him in the face.
There's
that nice little moment there.
Again, that as we were saying, that they come back together despite everything to get this done, because, you know, that's important. And then of course it leads to the,
and they do the very typical thing of Dean going, you know, Sam, about the last couple of months, and Sam's going, oh no, now before we start fight about something else, let's move right along, you know, god, and then no chick flick moments. But yeah,
very, very powerful, them coming together in that moment. I just loved Sam being at the mobile home when Dean rocked up with Crowley, and Sam's just like standing on what you think you need a demon to find four clues these days, buddy, you know, but the, just even that interaction. And then when they sort of agree to be together, agree to work together, and then they turn around and look at Crowley, it's just like, sorry, dude, you're out, you know, and just that moment, they're so like such a united front.
Exactly. In that moment. And even though it leads to a very sad place, it's strange because we're sort of in a way sad. I mean, and so the show does to us as well. It takes us to a place where we're sort of, you know, we're so pleased that they come together, except it's in the context of Dean dying.
And, thanks for that. Yeah, I know. Thanks for that, guys. But yeah, and just that whole last scene, you know, and I'm really glad that they stripped that scene back to just being I'm proud of us, because, you know, I don't think any other dialogue was necessary in it. And, you know, I think we all know now from various conventions that there was other dialogue, and
yes, they stripped back.
That they stripped back and, you know, had the conversation with Jeremy, who basically said, I trust you to do what you think is right. And so ended up being just, you know, I'm proud of us. They threw everything else out. And there was also, you know, just in the fact that originally they weren't supposed to just walk and stop there. They were supposed to go further, but that just they changed it while they were shooting it, just to have the little walk and then stop, and yeah, for Jensen to sit. That wasn't actually all scripted either. They sort of worked that out on the fly. And, it turned out, I can't imagine it being any other way. You know, it was so perfectly done. And just Dean saying, he didn't say, I'm proud of you. He said, no. I'm proud of us.
Yes.
And it was so important that just that one word,
yes,
changing that sentence meant everything.
Yes.
Wow.
Which is probably a good note to leave our wrap-up of Sam and Dean moments on. Yep. I have no idea what's to come in season 10. I am sure there will be
karaoke.
And I'm sure there'll be both happy and sad and painful Sam and Dean moments ahead of us.
And all of them are wonderful. Happy, sad, and painful.
All of them will be wonderful and devoured by us, and we'll come back at some point and update this list. And we could probably start again now and redo it with an entirely different list.
Yeah, we could for sure. Version 1 and version 2.
I hope you enjoyed that. Go back and watch some of these moments because you discover on every rewatch different moments, I think, and moments that resonate differently, given what's happened since or other things that you've picked up. It's extraordinary, this show, that after 9 seasons you can go back and, you know, the line from the characters now to the characters back at the pilot. These are both the same people, but they're also, as you said, they have grown up. They've gone from young adults to men over this time. They've been changed by what's happened to them. And at the core, we still have this incredible relationship, which is never going to be easy.
No, it's never going to be easy, but it's always going to be why all of us tune in.
And it's always going to be strong.
And it's always going to, you know, fill us with squee and make us, you know, cry and laugh and, you know, make our hearts all happy and sad.
We hopefully will do a season 9 recap before the season 10 starts. Yes. So if you...
Which is very soon. If like you 10 days or something.
I know. So if you've got your DVDs or you've got your DVRs full from the last season, pop them in, join us, let us know on Twitter anything that you might want us to talk about aside from everything.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, seeing as our average podcast runs about 1 hour 40 per episode, you should be able to just about listen to it by the time season 10 starts.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. I've been Jules.
And I've been Amy. Thanks very much, guys.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is WOLSPN@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.